So this week I got a couple of photos from two of your families of that moment last week of two little bitty guys who were watching the 9:30 with their family because they or somebody in their family were sick and they were home. And unbeknownst to them, mom took a photo of them sitting in front of the computer praying like this when we prayed like that. And it just grabbed my heart. I was like, I love this. I love it. And I also got a couple of photographs from some of you who are already underneath your tables and signing away the bottom of your table and starting that tradition. And I was just like, way to go. Thanks for doing that. How many of you ever have that weird feeling that somebody's behind you and you kind of get a little hair on the back of your neck stands up and you want to just like run? Do you know what I'm talking about? We have this race every night up the stairs at our house at bedtime, and I've never won. It's amazing how I always seem to lose that race. But there are times legitimately when you're like in a hallway by yourself or going upstairs where you just feel like, ugh, it's like a adrenaline rush. Can anybody relate to that? Okay, so we'll all go to the same counselor then together because it messes with me. But I had a thought about 2 weeks ago. I was talking about that with somebody. I went, that explains something. When I used to run, when I could run, I had this thing on the track when somebody was behind me, it made me kind of mad. Now, there were other people who were faster than me. You couldn't do anything about it. They just went past you. But if somebody was like tucked in behind you, it like ticked me off. And I would run as fast as I could to get rid of them. And I do that now in the car. She's told me before, everything in life is not a race. To which I say, sure it is. But if somebody's like this far behind you, what do you just like go and you just take off, right? Or you tap your brakes politely to get them off your bumper. But there's like this thing about something behind you that like pushes you forward. So in today's text, which is the last verse of our Psalm 23, the last Sunday, if you're a guest today, welcome to week 8 in the last week of a series called Never Alone. We've been walking through Psalm 23, and there's these things that are following us as we read through the 23rd Psalm. So if you've got a Bible, open up to Psalm 23, turn it on there, or grab your journals. This is our last week in that journal. And by the way, in 2 weeks, I'm going to start a new series from the book of Galatians. Christy and I watched a documentary about 2 weeks ago on Amazon called The American Gospel. It's 2 hours and 15 minutes. I highly recommend it. It is outstanding. And it confirmed something in me as we watched it that I wanted to do a series from the book of Galatians on what the gospel is and what it is not. It will blow you away. The first hour is an explanation of the gospel, and the second hour is really an expose on what the American gospel in some quarters has become and how it is not the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so I hope you can be here for those weeks. But in between, next week, we're going to do a standalone message called Street Smarts. It's a fresh way of talking about building relationships. How do we build relationships well with people to live out the gospel with them? So I hope you can be here for next week and the week after that. So let's check out this text where we are right now, where it says that surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. So what's the first word say? Let's say it together. Surely. Not maybe. Not possibly. Not on a good day. Surely, goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life. So last week we took that pause in verse 5, if you remember, where we moved from sheep and shepherd metaphor to host and guest, where we were safe from our enemies at the table of our host. And this week we're back into the shepherd and sheep metaphor. And if you can imagine shepherding a group of sheep and coming back at the end of a long day, maybe the sun is setting, it's quickly to be dark, and you're tired, they're tired, things might stretch out a little bit. But a shepherd's secret weapon is a sheepdog, who's not that much loved by the sheep as he is by the shepherd, but he is good for the sheep. Because a sheepdog will, when those sheep scatter or linger from just, maybe they're just tired or maybe they're distracted. A good sheepdog will run around and nip and bark, and if you're a sheep, they probably are annoying, you know. But a good shepherd knows that that sheepdog is in the back keeping things tight. If any of you have been to Israel with the Ray Vanderland group, typically those leaders, those shepherds who lead the teams up those hikes, they'll ask one person to be the back sheepdog. To keep an eye on things so that, because they charge up these hills and these trips and they can get scattered out. And if people go and they're not ready, they can get really stretched out. And that guy or gal in the back as a sheepdog is there to help, like, you know, kind of, let's go, let's stay with the flock, let's charge up the hill. My first dog as a kid was named Raider for the Oakland Raiders. And our first dog as a couple was a Shetland sheepdog as well. First two dogs. That dog ran around our house so many times. There was a dirt track all the way around our house. And for somebody who loves his yard, it drove me crazy. But it was in her makeup as a Shetland sheepdog, as a herder, to run in circles. And she did it so much, like I said, it was a dirt path. And so we have this blessing in life of sheepdogs who are behind us as we follow the shepherd, called goodness and mercy. And if we're honest, there are days when we feel like goodness and mercy left our flock a long time ago. And there's this sense of exposure and disappointment, disillusionment, and I don't feel safe right now from a host of things. And that's the human drama, right? Life is a collection of comedic moments and romantic comedy moments, and sometimes it feels more like a horror movie moment because it's scary. Maybe there's a death in the family, or there's a diagnosis, or there's a wayward child, or there's a thousand things that hit, and you're just like, ah, I know what your word says. It says that your steadfast love and mercy follow me, but I don't feel it. What do you do in that moment? How do you walk in that by faith? Kind of like out here. Like, welcome to Seattle. Like, the sun, like, left, right? But did it. It just feels like it. We know that because the dark became gray. But we know by faith that the sun rose, and it's out there. It's over the cloud bank. And according to the weather forecast, tomorrow the sun's out. And Tuesday, two whole days in a row. So there's this faith thing where you go, I know the sun's out there. I just don't feel it. I'm not laying out in the sun or exercising or whatever you do in the sun. And so how do you process life when goodness and mercy aren't seen or felt? I'll give you a great example. It's a guy in the Old Testament named Jeremiah. He worked for 40 years. Say 40. Years. Like 40 days to us is a long time. 4 days for us is a long time because we're microwave people. Bing, right? For 40 years, the man prophesied and spoke to the people of Israel. They would not listen. Nothing. No response. It's like me preaching here for 40 years and no one ever coming to Christ. Nothing. We also wrote a letter called Lamentations, in which he says this, and this is how we can learn from a man named Jeremiah. Because, listen, you follow people, if you're in a life situation that's hard, you follow people who have been there and listened to them. The clearest and hardest example I could possibly give is, if I had buried a child, and I'm with a family at a funeral or later after that, I could say to them, this is how we got through this. That couple listens to them in a way that's so different than somebody that hasn't been down that path, right? And so Jeremiah is saying to us, listen to me, where he says in chapter 3, verse 22, he's saying, remember my affliction and my wanderings, the wormwood and the gall. My soul continually remembers it and is bowed down within me. But this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope that the steadfast love, chesed, which is the same word on the screen here for mercy. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They're new every morning, just like the sun that rises, even if I don't see it. They're new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. The Lord is my portion, says my soul. Therefore, I will have hope. And so there's sometimes you have to preach the gospel to who? To yourself. That's not called crazy. That's called healthy. That we preach the truth that we know and believe to ourselves as we drive, as we shower, as we walk, as we fall asleep, and we confess those things that we believe to be true and dear to our hearts. And Jeremiah, as a man who labored for 40 years with nothing, is showing us beautifully how he did it and how we can as well. So what's up with this word chesed? It's as you see on the screen, it's this deep, abiding, covenantal love that says, in essence, if God covenanted it, if he promised it, he will be true to his word and he will show up. That it's not a promise like two humans would make and the other would break the promise. That if God says, I'm going to give you a couple of dogs that are going to follow you all the days of your life, one's called mercy and one's called goodness, you can trust, even though you don't see them, they're with you. And when we don't see them nor feel them, they are also a reminder, and we're going to bring this out more in a moment, that this is not our home. You might love your life. Awesome. This is not your home. You might hate your life. Awesome. It's not your life. You know why? Because there is another permanent place. That's why we say at funerals that so-and-so has passed away. Not that they've died so much. They've passed away, meaning they've gone from here to there, from A to B. We are pilgrims, which means you move, and you move somewhere. And in the context of this psalm, he says his chesed is following, it's steadfast, it's strong, it's committed. I didn't share this illustration in the first. It just came to me. Some of you have heard it. Some of you haven't. I'll lose credibility with some, and I'll gain it with others. So here you go. We were engaged. Senior, junior, Chapel Hill. She'd come over because the boys were playing football in the snow in front of Mrs. D's house on Columbia. The other street. And I was a jerk. I don't know what it was. I did something, said something, where she got really hurt and mad. And remember, we're engaged, so the emotion and the passion is strong. Well, while we're playing football, I pushed off, and I remember my torso was on the ground, and this leg was like there. And it really strained my groin. Hurts to this day. Because that night, the landline phone wasn't enough. I wanted to go apologize. And it was about a mile from Mrs. D's to the Ella house. And I walked through the snow like this. No kidding. There's like nobody out but me, the weirdo, who looks a little creepy, like, but I'm just legging it. And I'm like, so I get to her house and I knock on her door and I apologize. We have a great hug and we're good. I love you, baby. I was an idiot. It was the first of many, right? That's a good marriage, quick to forgive and all of that. It was a covenantal, I'm going to follow you. I'm going to chase you. I'm going to hunt you down to tell you those things. Why would I share that? Because the word for follow, for chesed, is this. It's radaf. It only translates 9-8 times as follow out of the 142 times it's used in the Hebrew. The number one use of that word is to pursue. The second is to persecute. There's like this sense that the goodness and the chesed, the mercy, the loving kindness of God is going to hunt you down, is going to pursue you and get to you no matter what it takes, even if it means like a lifetime strain of a body part because of the love that is inside here to say, I want to make this right. I want to get this good with you. So in your doubt, in your loneliness, in your disillusionment, in your disappointment with life, I want you by faith to know that the goodness and mercy of Christ hunts you down, comes after you, even when you don't think it or feel it or even consciously reject it, going, you have forgotten me. He can never forget you. He won't. It's not in his nature or his capability. He is passionately committed in covenantal chesed type of love for you. That is a huge gift for us. You've heard that word all through the Old Testament in different ways. Like, I'll just give you one. Psalm 103, verse 11 says, for as high as the heavens are above the earth, so great is his chesed, his steadfast love for those that fear him. That's the heart of a father for you. And as we wind down this series today on Psalm 23, it's a great end. It's a great stopping point to go, yeah, I'm going to keep moving forward in my life, and he's going to continually, out of his grace and his goodness and his kindness, pursue me and demonstrate his kindness and his goodness. The message says it this way, your beauty and your love, they chase after me every day of my life. And then he goes on to say this last phrase, this last statement where it says, I'll dwell in the house of the Lord forever. What is that? There's differing views on the commentators with this, and some saying that this is a practicing of the presence of God in your daily life, and others saying that is like the eternity with God, and some saying that this was like David wanting to go to the temple and all such things. Well, remember this, there was no temple when David wrote this. His son Solomon would build the temple. David wrote this when there was a tabernacle, which was the precursor to the mobile church. They tented, they staked it, they were there until he said move. It was temporary. The Apostle Paul talks about this in the New Testament, that we are tents, that we are temporary. These bodies are not permanent. It speaks of Christ in the New Testament as tabernacling or tenting with us. That he came in the flesh and lived among us. But all of those things speak to something temporary, meaning that there is something else later that is permanent. And that is called heaven. And that is our eternal home. And that's where we'll be forever. And where we get into trouble is when we love our life, is that we forget that this is not forever. And when we're in the depths of despair, and we want to give up and quit, literally or spiritually, or we forget this is not it. This is not the end of the story. There's more to come in this. So to illustrate the heartbeat of this series and this day, I want to share with you something that has come to mean a lot in my life. Our daughter and son-in-law live in Liverpool. John Farrington, our son-in-law, is a Liverpudlian. He was born and raised, lived forever there in Liverpool. And he has introduced us to, we've always liked soccer because our son played soccer, but this is football, not soccer. And the Liverpool Football Club has the most iconic song, according to many, the most iconic moment in all of European soccer. And it's when they sing, and it pushes 4 minutes long, You Will Never Walk Alone. It's an old Rodgers and Hammerstein musical from Broadway. And you go, oh, well, that's cute and that's quaint. No, not really. Bam. That's what I'm talking about. That is happening there, okay? 50,000 folks singing at the top of their lungs this song. And if you've never watched that, go home to YouTube, pull up Liverpool FC, You'll Never Walk Alone. That's the first one that'll come up. It'll give your goosebumps. It's so good. They're belting out at the top of their lungs, old and young, everybody, common color of red on, and they're singing this song of You'll Never Walk Alone. And when I saw that, I thought, that's the church. That's the condition of humankind. We said on day one of this series that Americans are lonely and the church is too. And yet you've got 50,000 people screaming, demonstrating what church should be. where we recognize as strangers we come in and we don't have the same jersey on. We have Christ in us. Have you ever been traveling abroad and you see somebody with your alma mater's shirt and you're like, hey, across some train station in Budapest, go Heels or go Pack or go Tigers or whatever you are. And it's like, and they're like, you don't know them. They're from Nebraska, right? But they got your jersey on. You feel connected. Well, try the indwelling Holy Spirit, the same Spirit that raised Jesus from the dead, the same Spirit that was at creation, now living inside of you and them. Like, we're family. So we sing in a way that should empower us, remind us we're not alone. Because this guy on the screen right here, when I saw him, I thought, why is he not appearing? If y'all can help me out upstairs, I've got a, there we go. So this is, the song is winding down. They're still singing. I found out after the first service, that's the captain actually of the team. But I thought, man, that guy right now, I promise you, because if you watch this, you're like, I want to run through a wall right now. And I guarantee, as a tough European soccer player, that dude is like, bring on Man U or whoever they're playing, because it's thundering all around me. You will never walk alone. You got to go watch it. Promise? Some of you, YouTube, Liverpool FC. Because that is a picture of us. What we want. But are you there? So here's the image that I want you to... Well, actually, I got ahead of myself. I want to show you something super cool. Good shepherd once, chief shepherd once, great shepherd once in the New Testament. There they are. The good shepherd, you know, John talks about Christ laying down his life for us, giving his life for us. The great shepherd in Hebrews is how he equips us. And then the chief shepherd in 1 Peter 5 is the one who's coming back, right? So here's what I really don't want you to miss. Watch the screen very closely. I'm gonna advance, but it's not gonna look like it. See the only thing that changed on the right? Psalm 22, 23, 24 are this beautiful trilogy of psalms that show us the shepherd. And they're prophetic of Christ. And I want you to see how the chapter before us shows the good shepherd laying down his life. The psalm we've been in for the last 8 weeks is how he equips us to live life. And Psalm 24 is a shepherd who will come back for us. And the truthfulness of that, and the beauty of that. And you go, wow, what a great. So if you're looking for a good, quiet time for weeks to come, just go through 22, 23, 24 and enjoy yourself. It's powerful. But here's the image that I want you to go home with. This is from the Jewish quarter in the city of Jerusalem. And it's Isaiah 53:6 that says, all we like sheep have gone astray. We've turned every one of us to his own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. This hit me so strongly as I was driving about yesterday in the city. And I thought, this whole series is about that. And here's the word picture I'll use to illustrate it. We've talked about, are you in a line or a circle or both? We've said a line represents worship, which is tremendously important. A circle represents those who have gone from here and have also gotten in a small group, whatever that is. DC, men's group, women's group, a service group, whatever. And this is what hit me. That piece of paper that has the circle and the line on it, some of you, there's just a blank sheet of paper. You're not in Christ. Yeah, you might be in the line, but you're not in the line because you've never said, Father, would you forgive me my sins? I believe Jesus, good shepherd, great shepherd, chief shepherd, gave his life for me and that I've been born again. And I thought, that's really why the last 8 weeks has happened and where it's led us to today. And so I plead with you as a pastor, as a under-shepherd of a flock, to say, have you been born again? Are you a Christ follower? Do you know Jesus as Lord and Savior? Because today is a great day to make that happen. Today is a great day to walk that out and to say, yes, when we stop and pray here in a moment, I want to do that. And as a segue to our prayer time, I want to share with you something from one of my favorite Texans, Max Lucado, who says this. What you felt that night, some of you have felt. What I felt that night, some of you have felt ever since. Things like this. Your husband died. Your child was buried. You learned about the lump in your breast or the spot on your lung. And some of you have felt far from home ever since your home fell apart. You have an eternal address fixed in your mind because God has set eternity in the hearts of man. Deep down, you know that you're not home yet. So be careful not to act or live like you are. Remember this, God never said this journey would be easy, but he did say that the arrival would be worthwhile. He is the Father of forward motion. Trust him, he'll get you home. And the trials of this trip will be lost in the joys of that feast with him. God bless Max Lucado. I want to invite you to join me at this altar to pray. And if you've never been born again, to come, to lift your hands up, and one of our prayer counselors will be right there and pray with you. And on the other side of that coin, if you have been born again, but you're like, man, I'm so ready to get out of the line and add a circle to my life, I'm going to find it. God, help me find it. I want to take that step. I invite you to join me as well.